Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming this morning, joining us for meditation and now Dharma talk. We probably still have more people online than in the hall. We have about 30 plus people in the hall. How many are online, Bill? 86. We have 86 online. So a full hall if you put them both together. Good. So before I begin for the Dharma talk, I want to just speak for a moment to members, but also I think it'll be of interest to non-members. Several members for a year, 2 years, I don't know, long time, have been working on something that's called the Sangha Harmony Guide, and it's gone through many iterations. Editings over the past period of time, and it is now being shared as sort of in a training procedure for all our leaders within our community, as well as all the members in the OI. So I have a Sangha Harmony Guide. Well, on a positive note, it really is a wonderful guide because it sets forth our goals and aspiration that we are a community that are wanting to live in harmony with one another. And this is our value. And we see this experiment in learning to be harmonious in spite of all our differences, of all kinds of differences people have, and that it's quite possible for human beings to live in harmony. But there has to be sort of a common template that people can live from so they know what that means and how to live it, and most importantly, what to do when there's disharmony. So this Sangha Harmony Guide really sets forth all the values in the way, which has a lot to do, of course, with accepting that from time to time there will be disharmony between people. People may feel misunderstood, people may not feel heard, people may feel taken advantage of, people may feel somebody's using their power over them. You know what I mean? All this kinds of stuff. I mean, anybody's been paying attention to the news in the last several years, you understand, what's going on. And again, this is also because quite honestly, in spiritual religious groups over the years, there has been a lot of malfeasance, right? Where people have, teachers have taken advantage of students, people in power have taken advantage. And many of you may know that, there have been part of communities of all kinds that may be a talk a good game, but actually behind the scenes don't really live it. So we want to live it. And we are fortunate in our community that we really have never had any real issues. It doesn't mean that there's have been over time people who aren't happy with the way things are, but it's never been disruptive. Going forward, we wanted to have clear protocols in the community. One, so just general members in the community know that we accept that conflict and disagreement will arise from time to time. It's a very clear protocol how to deal with that among peer-to-peer. But it also delineates if people don't feel that's working or don't feel that's safe, then there's a whole protocol of how to go to someone else and get help and support. Just want you to know that's coming to members, and hope again. I was very happy with it because it's a positive document. It focuses on all the ways we can and do want to be in harmony with one another, but yet we understand we are human beings, sometimes it breaks down in various ways. So there's a very clear means for healing. If that occurs. So please be attentive. That should be coming your way soon. So yesterday we had a day long, what we call a day long here, from 9 to 4. Probably all together, people in the hall, people online, we probably had a lot of people. 80, 90, 70, 80, 90 people all together. And it was a wonderful day. And what I taught was the Heart Sutra. Many of you who have been around know the Heart Sutra is a much loved teaching of the Buddha, as well as very profound and not easy to understand. So basically, we spent the day teaching it and helping people learn how to practice it and how to apply it in their daily life. So I wanted to kind of continue on the same more meditative strain that we were in yesterday. And so I wanted to share, there is something, this is the chanting from the heart book, you know, this is the Thich Nhat Hanh community, their chanting book, and there's lots of chants and gathas, ceremonies. But there's something in it which gets very little play in the Thich Nhat Hanh community. And when I discovered, I thought, this is really good. And I kind of checked around with some of the senior monastics, and it really has not been promulgated much. And I guess it's something that Thich Nhat Hanh wrote at some point, sort of to summarize kind of his meditative path. Anyhow, for those of you who have the Plum Village Chanting book called Chanting from the Heart, it's called 14 Verses on Meditation. And I'm sure you can access it. It's probably online too. And I'm not going to have time to do all 14, and I also won't have time for questions. So let me share some and comment on some with you. So number one says, just as a bird has two wings, the practice of meditation has stopping and deep looking. The two wings depend on each other. Stopping and looking go in tandem. This is, and maybe many of you know this already, but in the meditative path in Buddhism, there are sort of two types of meditation traditionally. One is called samatha, which is meditations that calm and quiet and stabilize the mind. Thich Nhat Hanh calls that stopping, okay? Then there's the other meditations called vipassana, which have to do with understanding the nature of things, looking, having insight, wisdom. And he calls this deep looking. So it's important that we understand, because many of us approach meditation primarily from the calming point of view. You know, we wanna stop this craziness up here. We want to stop these thoughts. We want to stop this ongoing rush of thoughts. And often, they cause us to act and to speak in ways that we later regret. So we want to stop. And so learning how to meditate on an object, learning how to calm the mind, right, clarify the mind, is obviously very helpful. Right, and a good step forward. But as he says, the stopping is only half of the practice. And actually in traditional Buddhism, it is the less important half. Why is the less important half? Because learning to pause, learning to stop, learning to calm, learning to pacify, are things that we have to do about things that are arising, have already arisen. So if you calm it down, that's good, but it'll come back. So you're left with the reality of always calming it down. It's like, it's like people who have headaches a lot, right? They're always taking what? Popping what? Aspirins or Tylenols, right? They have headaches, they take something. A lot of people, they have stomach issues, right? No, I mean, not serious ones. You know, and they're always popping what? What, antacids, peptides, you know what I mean? It's like, which you can do from now to the end of time. But it's not getting at the problem, right? It's like, what's causing me to have headaches? What's causing me to have upset stomachs? And you see, if we spent a little time looking at the cause, and we could eliminate the cause, then we can throw out the antacids. We can throw out the Tylenol and the you know, we don't need it anymore. Right? And so that, which is really what Buddhist meditation's about, it wants us to be free. Free of what? Free of suffering. Right? I mean, that's the purpose of the meditation. So therefore, calming, pausing, stopping doesn't free us. I mean, it does temporarily free us because we've stopped, we've paused. But as soon as we get back into life or get back into those situations, it's activated again and activated again. I.e. stopping is not enough. Calming is not enough. Stabilizing is not enough. It's enough that allows us to move on to the next one, which is this looking deeply. Looking deeply is causation. You know, what is the cause of whatever? Right? I mean, you know, the Buddha looked, you know, at big issues. You know, he wanted to know, what is the cause of all human suffering? Why do human beings suffer? He noticed that there was so much suffering in life. Right? And he noticed not just the suffering that people cause each other, but just suffering that people have just dealing with the impermanence of life. You know, that we age, that we get sick, that everyone dies. You know, that's that suffering which is to everyone. To the rich, to the poor, to whatever religion, race, whatever, it doesn't matter. Everybody, we all participate in the suffering of impermanence, right? So it's only by looking, asking the deeper questions, what's the cause, discovering the cause, looking deeply, and eradicating the cause that frees us. Now again, you know, each of us have our own our own relationship with our own self, so to speak. You know, and we have to, each of us, that's a very personal decision. How free do I want to be? Right? Like, how happy do I want to be? Some of us, you know, people go, well, if I could just, you know, bring down the suffering a little, right? You see what I'm saying? If I could just bring it down just a little bit so it's, you know, manageable. If I could just bring down the emotional acting out a little bit, that it's not so destructive. You see what I'm saying? You know, do I need to continue, right? Just bring down the stress levels enough that I can, you know, function okay. Yeah, that'd be great. And that is great. So, I mean, from a kind of a therapeutic basis, a lot of these Buddhist teachings and meditation can be helpful in remediating, you know, bringing down the intensity. But let's say you go, I don't even want to have to deal with this stuff. You know, I don't want to always have to be, you know, modulating my stress levels. I don't want to always have to be modulating my anxieties. Right? You know, is that what this is about? Or can I really free myself from them, right? And so that's what the deep looking. And he says the two wings depend on each other. Stopping and deep looking go in tandem. And his analogy always there is, you know, when there's too much going on, right? When our minds are so distracted or we're so pulled this way or that, it's hard to really give the concentration to really look deeply into what's the source of the issue. So there has to be a kind of a stopping, a calming, so at least the terrain of the mind gets clearer, right? So one can then look into it and actually see what's going on. You know, it's not that difficult. If one has a semi-clear mind and one's willing to ask the question, why am I suffering? Why am I suffering in this situation? Now, of course, that introspective question, that meditative question, that reflective question, you know, is very much based on kind of a Buddhist view, which is what? I'm creating my own suffering. As long as I'm holding somebody else responsible for my suffering, you know, then the solution is doing something about them. But once I understand that whatever they're doing, the emotional suffering, the mental suffering that I experience in my own body, mind. I'm not experiencing it anywhere else. So therefore, the solution to my suffering of within my own body, mind, is within my own hands. This is very empowering, right? And the pathway that we begin to understand our mind and clarify our mind and look deeply into our mind is meditation. Stop it, the second verse. Stopping means to be still in order to recognize, to be in contact, to nourish, to heal, to calm, to soothe, and to focus the mind. So he's put a lot into stopping, calming. It's not simply to hit the pause button so we can regroup. It's in that pause, in that stopping, we're doing something. We want to recognize what's going on inside us. Like even when we did our meditation earlier, we are recognizing I have sensations in my body. I have a breath. And if I become aware of it, it can calm me down. It can calm me. It can stabilize me. You see, but if I don't stop and take a moment to recognize what's already here, I'll never access it. So it is that stopping where we can recognize what's available to us, we can make contact with it, and most importantly, you know, from a kind of psychological way, we can nourish ourselves, we can heal ourselves. What does that mean? Well, in the same way that we know that to have a healthy body, to have an energized body, we need good nourishment, right? We need to be eating foods that nourish the body, bring in good healthy things to it. Many of us don't realize that our mind is the same. So we have to recognize and ask the question, you know, what am I nourishing my mind with? Do I ever nourish my mind with mindful awareness? Do I ever give it a vacation? Do I ever stop? Right? Do I nourish it with calmness? Right? What are the mind states that I cultivate? If I'm always cultivating stress and anxiety and anger and irritation, are those healthy foods for my mind? You know, our mind depends on us to provide good nourishment to it. But if we're not present to our minds, if we're not present to what's going on in our minds, you know, and if we're not present to what we're feeding our minds, you know, then we may find that we are actually nourishing our mind with fundamentally unhealthy things. And then we wonder why we don't feel good. In the same way, if we eat a lot of junk food or blah, 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 we wonder why our body just doesn't feel good. It's not healthy, it's not energetic. So it's very important that we stop and we look and we see, what am I nourishing my mind? Do I nourish my mind with irritation, with anger, with anxiety, with stress, with worry, with jealousy, with envy, with, right? You know, is that what I'm, because these are the mind states I'm cultivating. And that has an effect on the well-being of our mind. You know, do I, you know, am I nourishing my mind with kind, you know, kind thoughts, loving thoughts, reasonable thoughts, logical thoughts, you know, the kind of thinking and the kind of emotional states that feel good, right? I mean, does anybody say, yeah, when I'm really angry about something, yeah, well, that's great. I'm feeling great. I mean, we may feel strong and powerful and self-righteous, but I think most of us go, yeah, anger is a disturbing emotion. It gets me all riled up. It's hot. It can get out of control. It can, right? I mean, it's not, you see, it's not nurturing. And especially if you say, yeah, well, I don't, you know, I want to be a happy person. I want to show up in the world as a kind or loving person or patient person. You know, there are all these things we say. You know, we have great goals. But we only get there by nourishing those things that will create that kind of mind. It's not going to happen by itself. Again, it's like saying, you know, having great aspirations for your body. You know, and then you go, well, what do you have for breakfast? Well, I had what? Cocoa Puffs. Okay, and, you know, okay, well, there may be a relation, you know, between, you know, you see what I'm saying? Or sort of like, you know, well, you know, how much sleep do you get at night? Or, you know, do you ever exercise? Or, you know what I mean? And you realize, you know, you get all kind of screwy answers, and somebody just says, but my aspiration is I want to have a healthy body. You see, and you can see there's a lack of awareness. So stopping means to be still so we can be aware, we can be in contact with what's going on within our body, mind, and we could recognize what's going on, and we can, you know, take the time to do the things that are nourishing and healing for our body, mind, rather than the things that are toxic from it. Calm, to soothe, and to focus the mind. I mean, concentration and focus and attention, and aren't we called the short attention span society, or the younger generation is a short attention span I don't know. It seems like everybody has a short attention span these days. But concentration is essential if you want to be successful at anything, right? I mean, if there's anything that you want to become successful at, competent at, you have to give it concentration. You have to attend to it. There has to be kind of a repetitive quality of interest and discipline and whatever, so you become better at it, right? So concentration is, you know, if you're a student, you got to learn how to concentrate. If you're an athlete, you got to learn how to concentrate. If you're a musician, you got to learn how to concentrate. If you have a job, you got to learn to concentrate on it, right? In meditation, we need to learn to concentrate. Because when we concentrate on something, the mind, the energies of the mind are brought together and they're focused, and concentration, mindfulness, has a very energizing, calming energy to it, right? And again, it just doesn't have to be, you know, informal meditation. I mean, one can listen to music and be very concentrated, right? And use the music, or one can be cooking, or one can be doing all kinds of things. You know, one can be with other people and talking, and one is concentrated. It's not like, it's not like a serious thing, right? People think concentration. It's like, I'm just concentrated. I'm just present to you. I'm present to whatever's happening. My mind isn't going off in this direction and that direction, thinking about this and remembering that and planning that. And yet, but yet, if somebody said, "What are you doing?" you'd say, "Oh, I'm listening to music." But what's the truth? Are we really listening to music? You know, what are you doing? Well, I'm here talking to you. Well, are you really 100% present to me? You know, or are you off da-da-da? You see, so concentration is a very human and very important human ability. So that's stopping. Deep looking means to regard in depth the true nature of the five skandhas so that understanding may arrive to transform all sadness and pain. Actually, we spent the whole day long on this yesterday. So I would say that it should be, it'll probably be up to be listened to soon. So if you're interested in that, but basically, what does that mean? The five skandhas is a Buddhist term that basically describes a human being. A human being is a body and a mind. So these five skandhas are five heaps as a human being, their form, their feeling, sensation, their consciousness, their mental formations, contact. I mean, anyhow, they're just five aspects of what it means, of the parts of a human being, parts of their body, mind. And in deep looking, we actually look directly into our five skandhas, explore them experientially, to decide what are they really? Are they really solid, permanent, self-existent things? Or is it not like that at all? Is actually our mind and body an open field of experience where things are simply rising and disappearing in awareness, and there's really nothing solid or permanent there at all? There's a lot of implications to that. You know, one of the biggest ones, of course, is we put all our skandhas together, we put all our parts together, and we say, what? That's who I am, that's me, right? And then we spend our whole life protecting, defending, advancing the needs of me. I mean, that's just what people do, right? All me, 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 I. Okay? But what if it really wasn't like that? What if who we are was much vaster, much bigger, and that actually human life is less about separation and more about connection. Less about independence, more about interdependence. That would be a very different world. But as long as you have a world where everybody is so solidly identified with me and sees themselves separate from everybody else, you know, it's the world we have. So this deep looking can be quite wonderful. Four, the breath and the footstep generate the source of mindfulness, which enables one to recognize, to be in touch with the wonders of life. So this is kind of our practice, right? He's bringing us back to the practice. You know, and Thich Nhat Hanh, he highly recommends, you know, when we're sitting, to do full awareness of the breath. Hardly recommends walking meditation, to be present to each step. Doing that generates the source of mindfulness, right? It's an energy. Mindfulness is an energy. You can feel it. You know, when you're scattered and you're just lost in your head somewhere, or lost in the past, lost in the future, it's not grounded, and it's not clear, and it's not energized. But when one practices mindful awareness, right, and uses the experience of the breath, and even the practice of moving around, it's a very different experience. One feels more energized, one feels clear, and one feels, one might say, kind of empty, in a good way. We're not full of stuff, you see. Usually our minds are just full of stuff. You know, it doesn't stop. It goes from work to home to the world to politics to neighbor. Right? It's full. Full of stuff. And that sense of fullness and that sense of busyness does not leave us feeling calm and centered and grounded, does it? But learning how to be mindful. I mean, one can be mindful, you know, we can practice mindfulness at Publix, right? You just get on the Publix, you know, stuff's going on around, but, you know, you're walking. You're aware of your footsteps, you're aware of your body breath, you're aware of the environment around you. You know, it's a mindful experience. It's meditation in action. We don't always lose ourselves in dispersion. Right? So we want to learn how to use these very simple things. Again, walking, breathing. These are things we do normally. Right? It's not extraordinary. This is just what we do. We're always breathing. We spend a lot of time moving around. Well, what if I just learn to maintain an awareness rather than getting lost in what's going around me? What if I maintain an awareness? I can feel my body. I can feel myself breathing. I can feel my feet touching the ground, you see? I mean, one can handle life with that awareness. It's not like, oh my God, I won't be able to do my job. It's not like that. You'll actually be able to do your job better because you're grounded and you're clear. The mind's clear, present. So it recognizes, enables one to recognize, to be in touch with the wonders of life. So again, this is very much a very wonderful teaching of Thich Nhat Hanh, where he's kind of taken what traditionally are kind of meditative insights, and he applies it to our modern life. What's our problem? We don't notice the wonders of life. We're too busy what? What are we too busy doing? What? Yeah, we're too busy. But what does that mean? She said worldly pleasures. I mean, what are we doing all day? Thinking. Thinking about this, thinking about that, checking our email, checking the news 300 times. You know, what are we doing? Consuming. We're just keeping ourselves distracted, busy, working. Which again, I mean, we all have to work. I mean, it's not as if, but what are these wonders of life that we're not recognizing, like, how about I'm alive? What a miracle. And like right now, we're alive. I mean, that's pretty unique. I'm aware. I can hear, I can see, I can smell, I can touch. I mean, you know, basics. I can see you, you can see me. We can enjoy each other. We're human beings. Right? You know, we so many people these days, they see people as somebody, something I got to get something from. I got to get away from. I got to manipulate in some way. Rather than just going, oh, how wonderful to see other human beings. I mean, do we, you know, we live with people, we have relations. Do we think, how wonderful, you know, that I have people that I can care about? There may be people who care about me. That's a wonder. The blue sky is a wonder. Flowers are wonders. Children are wonders. Having enough to eat is a wonder, you know. Many people in this world don't even have enough to eat. I think it's wonderful whenever I sit down to a meal. It's like, wow. You know, I open my fridge, I go, wow. I probably have more choices in my fridge than some people have their whole life. I mean, this is, right? You know, I mean, so, I mean, there are all kinds of wonderful things that are happening. You know, I'm not sick. I don't have COVID. Right? I'm healthy today. How wonderful. I can walk about. How wonderful. You see, it doesn't, they don't have to be, you know, special things, you see. But we're not going to touch them if we're not mindful of where we are and what's going on. You know? See? When we walk, do we notice everything? Do we notice the sidewalk, the flowers, the people, the sky, the clouds? You see? There are wonderful things all around us happening. But as we said, we're too busy, aren't we? Too busy doing what? Stuff that doesn't allow us to touch that sense of wonder, which is very important, I think. When we were children, we had that sense of wonder. Everybody kind of have a distant memory of being a young child. Yeah, I mean, you know, like everything's wonder, you know, it's like, I love to spend time with my grandchildren because like they're like fresh. I mean, you know, they could go outside and go, all of a sudden lost in an ant, lost in a spider, lost in a, it's like fascinating. You know, they're just, it's a wonder to them, this life. So we still have that capacity, but it is, we have to move our attention away from this endless thinking. You know, we're so busy. You know, we're thinking great thoughts, right? Thinking about the world and the situation, about what they're doing and what they didn't do and what they should do. And right? I mean, it's good to be attentive to the world, but like, we're not attentive to our world. And our world is fairly simple, isn't it? I mean, most of us are not, you know, interacting with millions and millions of people every day, and most of our decisions do not affect, you know, billions of people, right? I mean, most of us, we're just like, right? We just inhabit a little tiny part of this universe. And we're fortunate that we interact with a few people, some more than less. That's our world, isn't it? I mean, if you think about it, our world is fairly mundane, you know. Sleep, get up, we spend time in the bathroom, we have to bathe, we brush our teeth, you know what I mean? What? Right? Make breakfast. I mean, a lot of our life is very simple, isn't it? We walk from here to there. how do we relate to those moments of being alive? Are we even aware? Are we already thinking? We get up in the morning and we're thinking about our day, planning our day, going over our day, or ruminating about what happened yesterday, or there's no happiness in that. We want to learn to touch the happiness that's right here through the practice of mindfulness, touching the wonders of life. 5, to calm, to relax body and mind, to nourish, to heal, to protect the 6 senses and to maintain right concentration. So again, this is a continuation of his previous stanza about mindfulness. That's the job of our mindfulness: to calm, to relax body and mind, to nourish, to heal, to protect the 6 senses, maintain right concentration. We have to protect our senses because we sort of touch the world through our senses, right? The things we see, the things we hear, the things we smell, the things we taste, the things we touch, the things we think about. These are our 6 senses. These are our windows to the world. That's how we enter the world and know the world. Why does he say we have to protect them? Because we live in a world where there is a lot of toxicity, a lot of unhealthiness, right? That's being sent around, especially in this age of media. And to believe that our minds are so powerful that that stuff doesn't affect me, I think is naive, right? We are affected by the things we watch, the movies we watch, the videos we watch, by the things we listen to, right? They affect our minds and they affect other people's minds. And again, it all depends what our goal is, right? If we want a happy mind, then are the things that I am allowing my senses to get involved in, is that nurturing my health, my healthy mind? Or the images, the words, you know, so many people listen to news obsessively these days. And all it does is what? It feeds what? What? Fear? Anger? No. Is that healthy? No. So again, you know, media, movies, all these kinds of things. It's like, you know, what's the effect on my mind? And as well as we can, you know, be concerned about the world, like, What is this kind of stuff bringing into the world? Do I want to support this? Is this healthy for the world? To calm, to relax the mind and body, to nourish, to heal, to protect the 6 senses, and to maintain right concentration. And then 6, and I'll stop here. I want to listen to you. Looking deeply into reality to see the true nature of all dharmas, which is all phenomena. Meditation helps us let go of all seeking, wishing and fears. Yeah. He's kind of nailed us. And somebody might go, why do I need to let go of all seeking, wishing, and fears? Right? Well, this is really being posited against another kind of mind state that we want to cultivate in our mindful meditative life, which is a mind state of inner contentment. Something that's, you know, in short supply these days. I think most people have of the mind of inner dissatisfaction. That seems to be the more prevalent mind. We're just kind of dissatisfied. Dissatisfied with ourselves, dissatisfied with our lot in life, dissatisfied with our job, dissatisfied with our relationships, dissatisfied with the world, right? So we have a mind that's very dissatisfied. So we always are wishing. Buddhism, we talk about hope and fear. We hope for this, but we're afraid it's not going to happen. We hope it's going to change, but I'm afraid it's not. So we're always kind of going back between hope and fear, which are polarities that are very disturbing to the mind. So wanting to have a mind, and it doesn't mean that we aren't motivated. It doesn't mean that we don't act in the world and don't have goals and all that. It's not saying that. It's saying, where are they coming from, you see? What is the place that it's coming from? And in Buddhism, and primarily through meditation, but through many ways, we learn that I have a place within myself that I've learned to identify and cultivate within myself. That no matter what's going on in the external environment, I know that I can always be okay. Right? They could lock me in solitary confinement and I could be okay. Because I know how to maintain a calm, peaceful mind. Right? See, that's freedom. It's not like I'd like to end up in solitary confinement. So to want a better job, but to also know if I don't get it, I can be okay, you see, is really what we're talking about. It's I want a better job, and if I don't get the better job, I'm going to be miserable. That's unhealthy. Because we can't control things, can we? You know? If I get this relationship, if I get this person to like me, then what? Then everything will be wonderful, right? What's the problem with that? What if the other person doesn't want to be in relationship with you? Then you're going to be what? Miserable. You've given away your freedom to be able to go. It would be nice if, but if it doesn't work out, that's okay. Because I know how to take care of myself. I know how to be with myself. Where do we learn that? We learn that through meditation. Meditation is that process that allows us to nurture and understand our own body-mind. And to learn to find a place of comfort and well-being within ourselves. That's freedom. It would be nice if we create a world like this. But even if it stays the same, personally, I can still stay peaceful. I can still have an open, loving heart. Still not cultivate anger or despair. Why? Because you know, I know my own mind. I'm not talking about me, but I'm saying all of us. You see, it's a freedom. And that's where we'd like to get to. Again, it doesn't mean to seek something, to wish for something is bad, but if it comes from a place of neediness, must have, then it's dangerous. So good, let me stop here. I've done a lot of talking, and I'm interested both online or in the hall, just any questions about this, how to practice what's been shared in real life. So think about your life, real situations, you know, what have you heard today that is beneficial, or you're not sure how to apply it? And please don't be shy. It's rare that we get a chance to be together and to talk about matters like this, you know. Susie, this is not the conversation around the dinner table or at work, the lunchroom, so please feel free to ask any question you want, and Bill's up there online, okay, and in the hall. Yes, Diane. Here.
The question, is this on? The question you posed at the very beginning of the talk, you know, what do we feed our body mind with, is really central to our current mindful living path intensive on living with intention and the four nutriments. And in these first 2 weeks, we're actually looking at the nutriment of volition. Uh-huh. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how volition fits into this and how we can practice with it to create well-being, you know, especially in light of, you know, letting go of striving and wishing, mm-hmm. but still having volition.
Yeah, so volition, again, is really what? Will, right? Volition, you know, and that is something that, you know, we have, that this is an aspect of our mind. We have the ability to have a goal, have an object, to want to do something, right? We have volition, and that's wonderful. You know, I mean, you know, I often say, you know, animals don't have a lot of volition. You know, squirrels kind of like are squirrels. They don't kind of think, oh, you know, do I have free will? I mean, could I really just do whatever I want? You know, animals don't unfortunately talk this way. But human beings, we have this ability, volition, right? And so what we're talking about as nourishment is, are the things that I want, are the things that I'm putting my energy toward, are they nurturing for me? Or are they not? Right? You know, wanting. Desiring. What does that do when I'm in that state? Does that nurture well-being? Does that nurture peace of mind? Or am I nurturing agitation, conflict? So, you know, what is my, you know, a very big word for will or aspiration is, you know, like what's my purpose in life? See, that's like a big volition, you know. You know, we are fortunate, many of us in our society. I mean, there are many people in this world who can only do, you know, they can only do what they're told to do, or they can only do what their parents did. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of freedom. We're some of us have more freedom than others, but we're pretty free in a certain way. In this world. So how do I want to use my volition? Am I going to use it just for my own well-being, or am I going to use it for the well-being of others? You know, the wish to benefit other people, to be of help to other people, to be kind to other people. You know, that's something I can do with my will to move my life in that direction. And so that's why it's considered one of the four nutriments, because we don't think about, oh, you know, what if I have this ability to move my life in a certain direction, right? Am I using it to move my life in directions that are noble, are healthy, bring benefit? Or am I just, you know, just using it just to indulge myself, self-indulgence, to get my way, to control others. You know, a lot of people are very strong-willed. Have you noticed that? But what does that mean, they're strong-willed? They're strong-willed to get their way. That may not be very nurturing for them and for others. Yeah, so I think, you know, yeah, that's very important that we stop and realize, yeah, I have free will. I can make choices, which is the exercise of free will. You know, it manifests as choices. Do this, don't do this. Am I present to that freedom? And am I exercising it in a wholesome way? Yeah, it's very important. Thank you, Diane. Other questions? Yes, Bill.
Can you please go into a little bit about how to get deeper insight on something without using the mind?
Without using the mind? Well, if, yeah, so... Yeah, the mind is, okay. We are bodies and minds. I mean, I don't know if there's a third thing that I'm missing, but we are bodies and mind, okay? Now, our mind is different aspects. Our mind is different aspects. Well, you know, on the one hand, we have what most of us identify as our mind, which is our thinking mind, the mind that thinks, the mind that is rational, the mind that is logical, the mind that can be analytical, right? So we have this cognitive mind that has these, you know, very good processes, right? But in Buddhism, that's just considered cognitive consciousness. But our actual mind is much vaster than that. You know, our mind is really this vast awareness, you know, because we can be aware that we can be aware of thoughts. So they know there's something else going on in here other than just thoughts. I am more than my thoughts because I can be aware of my thoughts. I'm more than me because I can be aware of me. Well, what is it that's aware, you see? That's our bigger mind, aware. And it not only is aware, it has this capacity to know. It kind of knows things. And it knows things before we think it, you know? You know, if I drink this, and if I say, oh, I'm drinking tea, I already know that. My mind already knows it before it puts it into words, right? You know whether you like something or don't like something before you say, I like it or don't like it. You know. So there's a mind that is aware and has the capacity of knowing, which has nothing to do with thought. Now, in insight, meditation, we learn to use thoughts to understand more deeply our mind by using the mind to frame the right question, which is the mind is good at, right? Who am I? What am I? Where do thoughts come from? Where do thoughts go? Are thoughts real? Can you find a thought? Self. Right? Where is my self located? Is it located in my elbow? Where does Fred live? This Fred, right? So we can use our thinking mind in an analytical way, right? I mean, it is only because of thinking that everyone is here today, right? Because at some point we have this wonderful mind of ours, when we use it correctly, we can reflect on our life situation, which animals can't do. We can reflect on our life situation and we can go, oh, is life working for me or not? I mean, that is a great, that's a spiritual kind of use of mind So is that answered that person's? I mean, it's saying there is a role for the mind. I mean, you know, we study these teachings. You know, we try to understand these teachings because we have a mind that can understand, that can think about things. Now, if we want to get benefits, we have to practice. We have to practice mindfulness. We have to practice concentration. We have to practice, you know, exercising our will. That's how we develop. But you know, it's not as if, you know, there's something wrong with having a mind. We all have minds. We all have thoughts. I mean, people think somehow if I learn to meditate, all my thoughts will go away. No, your thoughts won't go away. You have a thinking mind. It'll keep thinking. It's just the way, you know, when you're fully enlightened, you'll still hear. You'll still taste. You'll still smell. You'll still see. Thinking mind will still think. But hopefully it'll be thinking better thoughts than it's doing now. Any other questions? Yes.
I think you kind of answered it just in those last few seconds mm-hmm. there, but you know, with the ego, the more I dissolve it, the less things bother me, mm-hmm. the less I'm afflicted by things. Mm-hmm. The more I'm aware or concentrated, the more I'm involved and the mm-hmm. less my mind is thinking. Mm-hmm. So kind of like you were talking about, like pausing and stopping, but then it comes back, mm-hmm. but then pause and stop. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm at. But I find it a little frustrating that my mind never will go away. You know, I mean, I wish it would dissolve like my ego, or, you know, I'm a completionist, I guess. You know, I would really like it to go away.
And then what?
Stillness, complete utter stillness.
You could always have a partial lobotomy.
I could.
Right? I mean, I don't know. Do they,
something
is that a,
consider.
Is that a, I don't know, is that a possibility that people, you can't request a partial lobotomy just to kind of shut down the thinking part of the brain? You know? That would probably be considered unethical. Is that the,
I don't know what that would do for my.
Yeah. So, okay. Would you also like all bad people not to be in the world anymore?
Yes. Yeah. Since you asked, so I'll be honest.
Oh, yeah. And would you? Yeah, I understand. So one of the key things in our practice that we do is we learn to live in reality. Okay, and to accept reality as it is, and see that in its own way it is perfect just as it is. It cannot be other than it is. But when you realize that, and this is in the wisdom, you realize that the nature of everything, including your thoughts, are empty awareness. It's like bubbles. They don't bother you. You don't need to get rid of them because you understand them. Yeah, I mean, you know, the trouble is all the bad people that you'd like to get rid of, you may find this a little strange. But they might look at you and consider you one of the bad people that they'd like to get rid of.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then what? What kind of world is that going to be? I mean,
the world we live in now.
The world we live in now. So we don't, we want to create another world. And one of the first things we have to do is accept that all kinds of people live in this world with all different kind of opinions and personal development and, you know. You know, you've heard me say many times, it's like nature, right? There are bunny rabbits and little lambs in nature, and there are jackals and hyenas and wolves, right? I mean, and you know, we don't go around saying, you know, let's eliminate all the predators, do we? Why not?
Because that's balance.
Because there's a balance, and there seems to be a balance in this life. Somehow there just seems to always be what? good people and not so good people, right? People who are content and want to, you know, be loving and kind and create a just world, and right? And then there are people who want just the opposite. And that seems to be, no matter how much human history goes through its changes, it doesn't seem to be able to kind of get out of that one. Maybe one day it will, but I mean, I think that's just sort of the way it is. Just, you know, if the mind wants to buzz, let it buzz, just ignore it. Have a nice, open, spacious mind. You know, let the bubbles bubble through. Don't be disturbed. I mean, you know, we can live here on Nebraska Avenue. It's noisy. We have to shut them down. You think we should do that? Let's all go out in the street and just shut them down. Just have a big sit-in in the street and say, we want stillness. No more movement. What do you think? Well, you might get run over. But be careful. Yeah. People are crazy. Yeah, we have to let it be. And work with it. It's not what we have to accept, like, but it is what it is, and we work with it. We work with the world as it is, we work with our minds as they are. And learn ways to bring more light.